Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C. Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor for the Union Tribune. I'm in Miami. I left Pittsburgh where the Padres played, and I don't believe in ever, Ryan. I push back on all the absolutes that this world seems. It's the best. It's the greatest. It's the worst. No, it's not. But that was the craziest series. The middle game was the craziest game that I have ever covered. And I was at a four-game series in which the Rockies and Padres scored 92 runs in Coors Field. But that was Coors Field. This was insane. Padres sweep the Pirates. Ryan, in Miami to play the absolutely atrocious Marlins. Where would you like to start?
I would like to pause for a minute and talk about this last series. And I know we usually try to spin this stuff forward. We usually try to talk about what's coming up. But what we're seeing every night is so notable to me and so different. They are doing what good teams do. We've talked about beating bad teams, stringing together wins, winning on nights when you play like crap, Kevin. Like, they did a couple of things in that Pittsburgh series. They weren't sharp all the time, right? But they got just enough on a couple of those nights. And I mean, what stood out to you as sort of the most unlikely thing you saw during that three-game series?
Wow. You know, I watched the Pirates sweep them there last year in the smoke of the Canadian wildfires. And I just thought that this was a big deal that they would go. We talked about it before this stretch, that they would go in and take care of business. And that meant at least winning the series. They swept it. The fact that the Padres, the last two games, were trailing in the ninth inning and won. They did it yesterday in nine innings. They did it the next day in 10 innings while giving up runs, but still holding on. And the way that the bullpen set up, even though it was so taxed, so spent, it wasn't guys that, you know, it didn't play out perfectly, except it kind of did, right? Like you were in the ninth inning on Wednesday, the middle game. There was the kerfuffle over the pitch clock. Robert Suarez on the mound, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa at the plate. What? There's
bases loaded, one out.
Bases loaded, one out. And the clock didn't start properly. And then Kiner-Falefa was not, or no, it was Ji-Won Bae, I'm sorry, was not in the, not in game 4 seconds, but the umpire didn't, you know, it's been a long night for him too. Didn't call it, and which should have been an automatic strike. Instead, he calls when the clock goes down to zero on Robert Suarez. Mike Shilko's there, you know, Manny Machado's upset. He's, you know, the umpire right away says, I'm going to check with my guys. Both managers are upset. Mike Shilk gets charged with a mound visit. The home plate umpire, Andy Fletcher, tells Mike Shilk he has to go to Tanner Scott. Okay, so all that was for me setting up to you. Wow, what a disaster. They have to take out their closer, who has only thrown six pitches in this crucial situation. But oh my gosh, they had another all-star closer in the bullpen to get ready. And so Tanner Scott comes in, and it went like that, where they were able to use Jeremiah Estrada twice. Adrian Morahone got his first career save. What a huge save by him on Wednesday in the 10th inning. That was just a look. It was the Pirates. They had a winning record before that series. But Ryan, I thought them taking care of business and doing it the way they did, I thought it was a big series.
Absolutely. And I think I texted you about this yesterday, Kevin. To me, you know, sometimes when things are going right, and you create your own luck, right? In sports, in life, all that stuff. But when things are going right, sometimes things are going right. And to me, that the big moment of the series was actually yesterday.
Okay.
You've got Kyle Higashioka batting, bases loaded, one out, ninth inning. Padres trailing by one. He hits into maybe not a room service double play. It wasn't. There had to be a nice play by the second baseman there. They go 4-6. To three, Kyle Higashioka busting down the line, backup catcher or part-time catcher, not a fast man, busting it down the line. There's a wide throw from O'Neill Cruz, two-run score. Padres take the lead. Okay, so two pitches later, one pitch later, Kyle Higashioka looks around and realizes he's not being held on, steals second base, which at the time, well, you don't think a whole lot of it, right? Steals second base, ends up coming around to score on a single, would not have scored otherwise. And the way things shake out, the Padres win by one run. He is the difference in the game. And not to say that was a hustle win or anything like that, but it's amazing when you play the game a certain way and when You're going good. These things sometimes happen. And, you know, that he was busting his butt down to first base. You know, you don't know if that prompted the wide throw or not. But to have the presence of mind to then steal second in what is the deciding run in a sweep. I mean, I think we're having a different conversation today if they take just two of three. Sweeping a team is something that good teams do. And I think the Padres have proven in the last 2 weeks that they're a good team.
Yeah, yesterday would have been the cliche. They were tired. You know, they whatever. They lost, but hey, they've still won this many games. Hey, you know, they had a chance, blah, blah. And it's like, but no, you are, you know what? You nailed it. You nailed it so well. Even though I did talk about the steal and all that, it made me wish I'd written it differently. Because, yeah, he did hustle down the line. He did get to second. Also, this is something I meant to put in yesterday. You know, look, O'Neill Cruz is prone to – he has incredible arm. He's prone to those, right? Like,
20-something errors.
A lot of young shortstops. Yep. But Ha-Seong Kim went in hard, man, and was hustling.
Yeah.
And – like, I think that Kyle was out on a good throw, especially from O'Neill Cruz. And it, to me, I played it over and over. But close enough, the Padres obviously would have challenged. And, you know, like you said, maybe it did make a difference. And like you said, create your own luck. Absolutely. That was a big moment. Now they come and they play. I'm not sure you're ready to move on to this, but I want to make sure that at some point we address the Marlins are horrible. Like, we'd be talking about it if the White Sox didn't have the record and the record that they have. The Marlins are 43-73. So you got a team here that got decidedly worse at the trade deadline. I was going through their regulars and I saw that, man, none of their guys has a OPS. None of their regulars has guy of over 150 plate appearances has an OPS above 730. Oh, wait, that was Jazz Chisholm. He's gone. Oh, and then there was somebody else. De La Cruz? Was at
Brian De La Cruz.
Yep. Gone. So here's someone at 699. Oh, nope, that was Josh Bell. Gone. Nick Gordon has a 627 OPS. He's the top. He leads the Marlins regulars in OPS.
Can I break some news for you?
What?
I think he was DFA'd.
Look, there it was. I knew. You know what's funny? I had it in the back of my mind because, honest to God, like, why would I even pay attention to the Marlins? I'm covering a team that's coming in here. It's got so many interesting things. The Marlins, I know that the Padres should come in here, win this series. I'm like, all right, I'll just do some casual research. And thank you very much, Ryan.
Yeah, DFA'd earlier this week.
Well, to my point, correct? Like, it's wow. Every pitcher they're facing – a 26-year-old, a 25-year-old, a 24-year-old has an ERA in the fives. None of them has made more than 13 starts this year. Absolutely must win this series and probably should sweep it and go 6-0 on this road trip. It's baseball. That doesn't happen very often. All that stuff. But, like, again, we talked about it, Ryan. I think you were the first to bring it up. I wholeheartedly agreed. This period of Rockies, Pirates, Marlins, Pirates, Rockies, 15 games, you could get to what were they, whatever it was, 7 or 8 over. You can get to, 12, 13, 14, 15 over during this stretch. Then you've got a difficult stretch. But this here is where you get yourself in playoff position so you can kind of maneuver. Now, the Padres have also got themselves in a position to make a run for the division.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is incredible. I mean, the Padres are chasing the Dodgers. Diamondbacks are right there too. Don't want to shortchange the Diamondbacks who are just as hot with fewer good players, frankly, and beating better teams. Dodgers are 65-49. Padres are just behind him at 64 and 52. Can I go big picture here for a minute, Kevin?
Please.
Is there – you can catch the Dodgers, and what a story it would be, right? What a big deal it would be in San Diego and throughout baseball if the Dodgers' collapse led to the Padres winning the West. And obviously it's important to get that first-round bye in the playoffs, that there is something really to it there. Is there any risk, air quotes here, in treating this like it's your playoff? Trying to catch the Dodgers now that they're there, instead of sort of being a little bit more rational, going, all right, look, like, let's say it's a five, let's say they're down 5 in 2 weeks. Is it better to try to make that push, or is it better to try to line up your pitching, to make sure everybody's good to go, even if you have to play that extra playoff round.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of my things, I've written about it a little bit. I'm working on some stuff. Like, their focus right now, I think, is the players, is all about that day's game. And that's why they swept the Dodgers. That's why they lost to the Rockies. And then, okay, fine, beat the Rockies the next, you know, two. That's why they, you know, were able to have these crazy, wild, long games in the muggy Pennsylvania and sweep the Pirates. It's why I believe they do have a chance to come in here and not disappoint, as so many Padres fans, you know, wait for all the time here in Miami. They can come in and you know, sweep this team and keep going. I think their mindset's really good. But yes, going big picture, which is the job of the front office and Mike Shildt and his staff. Yes, Ryan. Like, I mean, who cares? What have the Dodgers done?
Right.
That's like, it's occurred to me, and it's far too early because there's a lot of time. Mookie Betts is coming back. I don't really know that it's all that important, you know, to get the bye. But what has happened with the bye, man?
Yeah. Yeah. What does that get you?
So now, winning the division's big. And if you are talking about it's going down to the end, you are trying to win the division. Right. But the fact is, man, no one remembers that. Like, no. We're going to remember the Dodgers decade because they won it so many times. But what else do we remember about that decade? The Asterisk World Series?
Yeah.
Like,
that's about it.
You know, that, yeah, no, this is all about, now, if you can do both, fine, but this is all about setting yourself up for the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think something that we should talk about here a little bit too, and this is sort of a squishy, nebulous idea, but, you know, if the Padres can take 2 of 3 here or even sweep, it will clinch essentially the best 3-week stretch they've ever had as a franchise, correct?
I believe so. If they can win these next two, it will be something no Padres team has ever done over an 18-game stretch.
Right. You come home again to play Pittsburgh, correct? So another winnable series. I wonder if we don't start to see a playoff atmosphere at Petco Park. You know, to me, the way this team is playing, I mean, look, Petco sold out a lot anyway, but you know and I know, Kevin, that there's a difference between, you know, the Petco can be a special and very loud place when everybody's bought in. To me, if they come back and they're the hottest team in baseball and they're chasing the Dodgers every night and everybody's scoreboard watching in the months of August and September, that could really make for a different environment there. Something we haven't seen, frankly, in a long time, because there hasn't been that pennant race coming down the stretch. When was the last time they won their division?
And I will say this too, as the guy who covered the biggest team in town, there's nothing else now too.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Right.
There's nothing else now because there were some good teams early days of Petco, right? There were good teams in the mid-90s.
Sure, pragmatic teams at Petco and, Padre teams.
But it was also, you know, Chargers preseason and then Chargers season.
Yeah, where were you every Saturday and Sunday? Probably not at Petco.
And that's not me talking. That's like that's TV talking. That's attendance talking. That's newspaper website hits talking. That's people in coffee shops and donut shops talking. That was just reality in San Diego. You know, I was just in Pittsburgh and the Pirates had gotten people kind of excited, but I was talking to some people that were like, even if the Pirates were still hot, Steelers season starting, man.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I remember back when I lived in a different state, I'd go to Phoenix in the month of September go to a baseball game. And if you went on a Sunday, there'd be nobody there. And not just because Diamondbacks fans don't show up, but because, you know, hey, man, the Cardinals are playing the Vikings, you know, and it's a different vibe a lot of other places here. I mean, to me, that's one of the things I'm excited about when you think about the Padres being, you know, just back on the Dodgers, a couple of games, is if there could be an honest to God pennant race. I think that this could make Petco Park a very fun place to be most nights.
But I really, to get back to your point, I will think that it will be a storyline of, I mean, this shit, the postseason and the regular season are so different in this game. And it's October. It doesn't rhyme with September, but it's not September you remember.
Right.
It's October, right, man. And it will be important to see what happens is if you get in that big race and then you have 5 days off.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or let's say you do clinch it with 2 days before the season. You have a week, basically. Mm-hmm. Now, that will be everything Mike Schilt and his staff made up of teachers, you know, recent minor league guys, like all about like motivation. And if they will spend that week trying to stay intense, but it ain't what, look at what the Padres carried from the Mets into the Dodgers in 2022, right? Like, look what the Dodgers have struggled with. I'm not saying that's why, but it absolutely has to have something to do with, you know, their collapses in the postseason, that they were able to cruise even before there was that bye, really. They were able to cruise for so many seasons in September. So, heck, in August, except for a couple years, that has to have had some impact on the Dodgers when it comes to October. Now, they did make it deep. They did go to some World Series. I'm not saying that was the number one, but I just, you know, I look perfectly fine with a wild card series. And boy, would the Padres love it to be at home and you get two or three games at home.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. You could almost argue both sides. I mean, I think that you'd also sit there and go, hey, strange stuff happens in short series in the playoffs. Just look at the Mets, right? When they played the Padres a couple of years ago, you know, I think that a team would probably rather advance through and be the more rested team. But you've also seen that that's not always an advantage in a sport like baseball, which isn't physically exhausting. It's not like you're asking a team to play three football games in a week, right? This is momentum. Like, and I know that momentum is something we can argue about on a different show. I'm fascinated just by the whole thing. And a certain very smart reporter wrote a story in the UT, 3 weeks ago, about the success Mike Schilt's teams have had in the second halves of season. And that we talked about it on here a little bit in terms of early in the year, they talk about just getting a little bit better and that don't worry, we're coming kind of a thing, which is, you know, hey, yeah, you can do this better, but, you know, we'll get better and we'll keep pushing and keep pushing. And we're starting to see some of that now, not just because they're playing the Pirates all the time, right? But like, this is a team that is better and playing better now than they did in April and May. What's been the big difference in your eyes?
Man, I will maintain that it's not all that different. It's more consistent.
Right.
I will maintain as that smart reporter. Thank you, Ryan. Yeah. Yes, I wrote the one story, but I was saying all along, like while pointing out what needed to get better, that these were just words now, but that all along the whole mantra of better, you know, as the game goes on, better as the series goes on, better as the season goes on. And also Mike Schilt's history as a manager, history as a teacher. The fact that it wasn't just, and I know this is what, look, it was tempting to hear. What a lot of people heard was similar to last year. Hey, we're going to be there. We're going to get better. You know, the baseball card, back of the baseball. That wasn't it, though. They were also out working every day. They were also talking more, having regular conversations, constructive conversations, concrete reasons and things that they were working on that would make them better, would make them more consistent eventually. Now they had to do it, so we were all in a wait and see mode. But this is, I just look, they are hitting better. They did they're pitching more consistently. But really, I don't think they're playing that much better than they were almost all season, actually. But they're doing it more consistently. And then what that does is that builds up confidence. That does, like you said, that creates your own luck. And yeah, that's what's happening in my opinion. And I, you know, I'm around them more than anyone else and talk to people. And I give a lot of credence when people say something before it happens and then it happens pretty much like they said.
Right. You had a great quote from Manny Machado in today's Padres Daily, which you asked sort of, hey, what's the difference between this year and last year? He said, hey, it's just a different team, different year, different vibe. We just go out there and compete 27 outs. All year we've been doing it, and we're going to continue to do it. This team, we compete. Whether we're doing bad or we're doing great, we go out there and leave it on the field for 27 outs. This team has shown it day in, day out, you know, and that's our mentality. We're not going to give you anything easy. And you said, you know, tell me more. And he said, I don't know. I'm not a writer. I don't know those words to explain to you what it really is. When I read something like that, if you filter out the sports cliches, right, all 27 outs, et cetera, to me, what he is saying is there is a buy-in this year that may not have existed under previous managers, not just Bob Melvin, by the way, right? Manny's been here for four or five managers. that there seems to be a buy-in. And I'm curious, Kevin, do the results kick the buy-in into effect, or does the buy-in lead to the results? I mean, what are you seeing from these guys?
The buy-in led to the results, in my opinion, because you were hearing it from spring training. I'm not hearing much different about Mike Schilt. And Mike Schilt had the benefit of observing for 2 years. Okay. And
what didn't work, right?
What didn't work. Also what he does that he felt would work. Let's remember, the guy went to the playoffs every year in St. Louis. All right. And those teams arguably didn't have the talent that this team has. Though I will say, this team's done pretty well with some big injuries and some big guys not doing well. But look, last year's embarrassment. Just think about yourself. Like, sometimes it takes rock bottom, or it takes being embarrassed, and then you make changes and you buy in. And Mike Schilt came in a real fortunate time too. Yeah. Right. Like it's the age old thing, actually, for any head coach, manager, person. You're always pretty much, if it stunk before, Bob Melvin had it, right? Mm-hmm. At first. And, you know, Mike spent a lot of time building relationships in the offseason and in spring training. And he had the background of having been here for 2 years.
Right.
So I give Mike a lot of credit. I'm always going to be the guy to say the players play. Mike could be freaking Vince Lombardi and Connie Mack, Earl Weaver, and Jim Leland all wrapped together. And if Manny wasn't hitting better, right, and Dylan Cease hadn't got back to being that version of Dylan Cease, sorry, wouldn't matter.
Right. We've talked all year that when they were struggling, the one thing that was going to pull them out was going to be their stars playing better. And lo and behold, Manny Machado's playing better. I mean, made one play every game in Pittsburgh in the field where you go, I mean,
all that's things. Big, Ryan. Big moments.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, a 2-run homer, arguably bigger, especially in a close game. Saving runs like he did yesterday and doing it all the time. And I love it when he's like, anybody can make those plays. Shut your mouth, Manny. And you know what? Here's the thing. You're going to go up to Manny after a play like that, and he's either going to be like, it only depends on his mood.
Right.
He's either going to be like, anybody can make that play. Or he's going to be like he was yesterday. Yeah, that was really big, man. That was not an easy play. That was a tough play, I love that. Right? Like, why should he lie? The guy freaking saved the game.
I want to be as happy just once in my life as Yuki Matsui was running to the dugout yesterday.
It was so big.
It was so awesome. Hey, real quick, a couple more things before we go. Fernando Tatis Jr. update. What are we looking at?
What I am, in conversations and asking that September, and they seem to be very sure about it. Like he's going to be back. Now, what does that mean? But I'm just saying, like, they really believe this guy's going to be back. Here's the deal. Stress reaction will not be healed. But you know what? Xander Bogaert's fracture isn't entirely healed yet, right? That's just how it is. It's when is it good enough by doctors and by how Fernando feels. Could he in a couple weeks be on the field facing pitchers? Sure. And then week, 10 days, 2 weeks, back in games? Yeah, absolutely. So they are very – very optimistic that they will have kind of a late trade deadline pickup of a very, very good player in September.
Great. Joe Musgrove Monday?
Joe Musgrove Monday, almost certain. And look, there really isn't an update on you, Darvish, but I guess if you want to be optimistic, still 50-50, but it's not, which means, and it's not just like, oh, we don't know, could be, could not. It's, yes, it is still a possibility that Yu Darvish pitches this year. Look, the reality is they don't need Yu Darvish. I mean, I should say this. I'm sorry. There's not a blatant need for Yu Darvish. You are not going to, you're not going to say no to Yu Darvish coming back or say you don't need him. But right now, like, it's what my point was, that there was a point where we were like, oh, man, wow, really be really good for them if Yu Darvish came back, because, like, what else do they have? And I still look, Michael King could hit the wall at any moment, right? Mm-hmm. Matt Waldron could. Randy Vasquez is, he's the number five starter, a good one, right? Mm-hmm. Martin Perez sure pitched well and can pitch well. So I'm not saying, yes, they could use him. Joe has been pain-free and throwing really well, but he hasn't pitched in a major league game since May 26th. So I just want to make it clear. They could use you, Darvish, but it's not a desperation thing.
Right. Well, and let's be very clear, too. Nobody's coming up from El Paso who can help you. I mean, Johnny Brito's numbers aren't good. The guy who I think led the Chihuahuas in wins as a starting pitcher, Jackson Wolf, was designated for assignment. This is, if they're going to get starting pitching help, it's going to be because Joe Musgrove returns and Yu Darvish returns. And that's it. I mean, there's no prospect killing it somewhere that you're going to see in the organization in September.
Maybe in the Dominican Summer League that we haven't heard of yet. Yes.
Right. Some guy who'll be their 12th ranked prospect next year or something like that. Right. Real quick before we go, I just had a question. I was watching this game. You know, this series. It's the last week of summer. My kids were around. I have questions from a couple of 10-year-olds.
I'm sorry. I know how great it is when school starts up again.
Oh, Monday. Let's go. Questions from a couple of 10-year-olds. Oh, why does Jurickson Profar get hit so much?
I do think that there's a little bit of bad luck. Jurickson does stay in the box as much as he does the dramatic, pulling away and stuff. I love Jurickson so much. He and Fernando stay in there pretty late.
Right.
They're trying to pitch him tough, man. They are pitching him inside just like they do Fernando. I think the slider got away from the second pitcher yesterday. But four hit times in a series.
Right? Yeah. It hit him in the foot. I mean,
that slider got away. Right, but the first three, I think, were some sort of variation of fastball.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a little higher. Mm-hmm. And not cool, man. Not cool at all. Right. Like, at some point, if Jurickson gets hit in the next series, intentional or not, at some point, it's. And I want to say, and I wrote about it in a little bit of a wink, wink way. There was no real indication from anyone, I want to be clear, that Randy Vasquez hit Brian Reynolds, the best hitter, arguably, on the Pirates yesterday, in basically the same place that Jurickson Profar was hit the night before. But Randy loves Jurickson. So
take for that. Yes. Take that for what it's worth. Yes. Yes. I thought it was not funny, but instructive. He gets hit yesterday and clearly not intentional, hit him in the foot, but the catcher's kind of between him and the pitcher and they're walking to first.
Umpires. Yeah.
And he's just got four fingers up. It's like, it's four. At some point, whether they're intentional or not, and we saw this when they were playing the Nationals here, right, in late June, early July. Like, at some point, if you keep hitting a guy, it doesn't matter whether you mean to. Yeah. And to me, I just thought that was very interesting. And I'll tell you what, a little bit like Ha-Sung Kim, there's been a couple times this year where Profar has gone down, and I've texted you, or I've texted people, I go, well, that's it, he's done. I mean, when he got that one on the inside of his, or the just above his knee, and
very painful.
And he's throwing his helmet to the ground as he's falling. I thought, they need a left fielder now.
I know what,
and I don't know if that's just him or if he's just, he's shown that he's tough. He's playing through a lot of stuff.
That's basically ball on bone, and he's angry and in a severe pain. And also, Jurickson is incredibly passionate.
Right. I thought that was, to me, that was a cool moment of the series. And then we'll stop talking about a Pirate series. He's running to second on a foul ball, gets to second, sort of gingerly holds up, and almost instantly Schilt's out there. Right. And for the second time in 4 minutes, he talked everybody into keeping him in the game. Not only did he stay in, but he played the next day.
Yeah. Actually, wait a minute. When he went into second, he came out.
You're right. Sorry. But they brought in Kim.
He did argue, and Xander Bogaerts went over and kind of helped him,
Right, but he was back in the lineup playing. Right.
Your point of he played the next day. It's like, yes, this is why. I mean, look, there's fake toughness. That's not what Jurickson Profar is playing. Tough, man, this year. And – there's just a lot of reasons. I will say this. They got fortunate. It was a bonus that he's hitting like he is, but they were spot on for the big reason they brought him in. And that was what he provides, not even just off the field, on the field aside from hitting, and then in the clubhouse. These guys really respect him, and they have before he was hitting like this. He's been in the league a long time. He knows how to play. He plays right. Just a really good guy to have.
Right. And to me, another example of buy-in, it's hot. It's August. If this was a team that was 15 games under, and if Jerickson Profar wasn't a stand-up guy, you could totally see somebody walking straight into the dugout after getting hit like that. But, this team seems dialed in. Playing as well as they've played all in multiple years, Kevin, don't you think?
Yeah. You know what? 2022, they were hot, but in the beginning of the season, and then it wasn't like this. It felt, I don't know. It felt like there were some guys that were super hot, like Hosmer and Machado led the league, everything. And it just, it didn't feel like this, but you could say, okay, yeah, they were super hot. Then they played not very good the rest of the season and got on a run in the playoffs. Last year, of course not. All season I've been saying there's so much reminiscent of 2021. So let's be careful. The difference is they have more, the pitching was the real issue that year. Right. And they have that this year. This, that was a collapse, and this would be a collapse if you didn't make the playoffs. I agree with you. It is. There have been stretches. But like I said, this is about to be, if they can win a couple games here, unprecedented over a stretch of 18 or so games for the Padres. But I honestly – and they don't feel like it.
Right.
Feel like they're playing at a level that is that much higher than earlier in the year. They're doing it virtually every night.
And when they're playing bad teams, like they did in Pittsburgh and like they will against the Marlins, when you play like that, you win more often than not. You win very often, in fact.
Here's what I was going to go with last night as my newsletter. You remember when they used to play the Dodgers and it felt like, maybe the Padres are getting a little closer.
Right.
But they would make an error and the Dodgers would pounce, man. And you would say, yeah, you can't give the Dodgers an extra out. You might be right there with them or close, but you got to cut down on those errors. Guarantee you that's what the Pirates are saying. Can't give the Padres extra out. Can't do it. And to me, that's a real sign of progress.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Padres Marlins 3-game series starts Friday afternoon in Miami. Kevin, enjoy South Florida. And then we'll talk muggy, Monday.
Freaking muggy. Get off the freaking plane. You walk outside. It's like someone took warm cellophane and just wrapped your body in it. Anyway, there's my
complaint. So this would be a good opportunity for a seersucker suit. Just saying.
Oh, man. I do have a pink penguin polo. I've decided to embrace the Miami spirit. Me and Manny. Manny will probably be wearing some pink and neon. He's back in his element.
Awesome. Awesome. And then, we'll talk next time. We'll talk Monday. We'll talk Joe Musgrove as he gets ready to take on his old club, the Pittsburgh Pirates, Monday at Petco Park. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. We went a little long today, Kev. Thanks for doing that. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.